Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we'll be discussing some D23 reveals, reviews of skincare, and we'll even talk about Borderlands. And our topic this week is why are movie adaptations so hard to get right? Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, buddy.
Troy Heinrichs.
What?
And Amanda Sink actually had a work emergency, so she could not be here because she's more important than us, I guess.
I like it how you had to qualify it with actually.
Right? I'm trying to be fair. Hey, remember, you can find more information always at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider. And I do want to tell you right at the top before you get too all into this. This is going to be our last regular episode until we return on September 11th. We're taking the rest of the summer off.
Vacation.
Exactly. There'll probably be a compilation episode. But outside of that, we will be back on September 11th with our Summer Entertainment Awards, which is always a fun and popular episode. So look forward to that. So I hope everybody really digs Alien Romulus and... The Crow, is that still coming out? Did they just cancel it yet? Is it still coming? I think it's still coming. Whatever you enjoy over the summer. But I want to give you a heads up, just so if you come back and you're looking for new episodes, and you're like, why is this old stuff? I don't want old stuff. I want new stuff. We're taking a little break. So, speaking of, no, Aaron, don't. I had such a good joke, and I'm not going to do it. So, this week marks the 10th anniversary of losing Robin Williams. And I just thought it's worth mentioning just because there's not many people I feel like are still as impacted by a celebrity's death a decade later as they have been with Robin Williams. This whole week, I've just been seeing nothing but love and expressing love and joy, etc. Did it hit you guys too? Or is it just me?
That it's the anniversary of the death or when he actually died 10 years ago?
Well, obviously when he died 10.
I mean, yeah, we missed the guy, but it's been 10 years also.
Man, what? He's so dead inside. Just
I swear.
Ice baby.
He's like Robin Who?
What about you, John? That one hit you pretty hard, right?
It did hit me pretty hard. As far as like this week is concerned, I've got closer alligators to deal with. Yeah, sure. I miss him, and I wish I had him in my life as far as like in entertainment more often these days, but I have closer alligators to deal with.
I like how you said it twice. Like, you just closer alligator. Is this like a new saying? Did you pick this up this week or what? Is this the new brat? What?
No, I've been saying this for a little while. I get circular with my words.
I know. That's true.
I don't look at anniversary deaths as an anniversary thing. I mean, that's the thing. I think for me, like when I think about deaths, it's like when it comes to an event. So for me right now, this moment, I'm more thinking about Philip Seymour Hoffman because he was in Twisters, and Twisters was the most recent thing came out. So Philip Seymour Hoffman's death is probably more in my brain than, say, Robin Williams.
What?
It's just weird how my brain works. Like,
that's a weird way for your brain to work, because Twisters is not the most recent thing to come out. I mean, there's been like 6 movies that have come out. There's been like 5 weekends since that thing came out.
And all of them could have Robin Williams in it.
In the concept of like actors who have impacted me who have died recently, like... The first one on that top of my brain is Philip Seymour Hoffman because...
So PSH is more important than Robin Williams is what you're trying to tell
us. To him.
In this exact moment, this now time right now, like Philip Seymour Hoffman was more on the top of my mind than Robin Williams because of Twisters recently coming out.
What about your now time later though?
Is it now? Is it now? Or is it now later?
It's now later.
It's always now and later. Those are delicious.
Oh my God. We're just going to have to mute his mic. All right. So James Wan is going to direct, and we miss you, Robin. John and I miss you for sure.
Yeah. I mean, we're sure you're listening to the podcast because in heaven, you would be listening to our podcast.
Look at you making
it. Is he in heaven? I mean, did you see What Dreams May Come?
That would be a cool place to go.
Honestly. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So James Wan is going to direct a remake of Creature from the Black Lagoon, which is a classic horror movie. And I know some people, you know, you might be a little oh, great, another remake, blah, 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 blah. James Wan is one of the best directors in horror currently. I mean, you know, he's behind Insidious, Saw, and so many other things. He just created formed a new production company. I think they're working directly with Blumhouse. You know, there's a lot of wonderful horror under his name. And also in Aquaman, he directed Aquaman, and that scene in the trench, which was almost going to be a movie, would have been fantastic to capitalize as a horror movie. So I think this is like as close as we're going to get to it. And I'm excited about this. John, I know you're a fan of this movie.
Yeah, I'm a fan of this movie. It's a creature feature. I love creature features. And then James Wan does have his own personal twist that he likes to throw on everything. And I like his twist. That sounded weird. But overall, I think that James Wan has a vision that he'll be able to accommodate not only be able to tip the hat to the old creature of the Black Lagoon, but also make it something new and fresh.
He also did Malignant, by the way, which was wild.
That was great.
Does this have any relation to like what Universal Monsters thing that was supposed to be happening? Is this like an idea that was in that concept and that's why this is getting made now? Or I think it's is it just something that James Wan wanted to do?
No, I think it's part of it. I mean, it's all connected, right? They're trying to reinvigorate that entire world. And this is one of, you know, those classic monsters for sure. Hope it works out. I'm looking forward to it.
I think it's just been so long.
That's a good thing. That's a win. Maybe not for name recognition, but I think most film buffs know the name. But it's definitely a win for creating something new. Because honestly, if you go watch the old one, you're going to be like, oh, this is really not great. Because the costume is not great. And it's, you know,
but it's also 1950s. Yeah, 1950s. Yeah, so I think that's the question of if the demographic is 25 to 54 that has the disposable income, is this too dated? Like, should I be focusing on remaking 70s and 80s movies?
No, because he can make this for a modern people that have never heard of it before will think it's brand new. But the name will still click in their head because they've heard it over the years. But they'll think it's brand new, and he'll totally put a whole new aesthetic to it. I have
and we're total thinking faith. And we're thinking 18 to 35 year olds are going to jump on this to go see it.
A horror movie? That's the number one. Yeah, it's absolutely still one of the best sellers in theatrical.
Yeah, I don't see that there's going to be a problem with it. If you want to take a look at history, look at what the remake history of the House on Haunted Hill with Catherine Zeta-Jones and Liam Neeson.
I don't know if that's your best argument so far, but go ahead.
I'm just saying, back in the 90s when that came out, the whole demographic of 18 to 19, 20-year-olds went to go see it without knowing that it was originally a black and white movie from the 40s or 50s.
It was a haunting. It wasn't the haunting. I mean, it was adapted from, but they called it the haunting.
Yeah. The haunting.
Yeah.
And, but at that time, I think that was helped by the fact that you had things like Scream and other, and Blair Witch and all that was like a big thing at that moment. So those kind of types of movies were working at that time for that.
That was a great time in horror. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Still is.
I don't know if that's
still is.
I don't. Yeah. But things now are more like Saw and Paranormal Activity. And this is not that type of a movie.
I think we're past Saw and Paranormal. Well, we're not past Saw, but we're past Paranormal Activity because Saw is apparently going to be forever. But we're into the more niche horror. I mean, you've got Smile. You have Megan. You have things that are being. Concepts that are being reinvented in a new world, like Megan is basically just Child's Play reinvented. And so I could see them taking Creature from the Black Lagoon, which is really just about a crazy creature in a lagoon, and making it about something a lot more and a lot more terrifying. And maybe you could do something a little Lake Placid with it, add a little humor to it. And there's a lot of ways they could go. And James Wan, again, one of the best horror directors out there. So there's you're doubting him way more than his mother will.
I don't think I'm doubting him and the work and what it's going to, I just don't know if it's going to be a marketable thing that Universal is going to get its money back on it. That's what I'm saying.
He'll probably do it for like 25 cents. Who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, look at Shape of Water. Shape of Water got Oscars, and it's essentially Creature of the Black Lagoon bangs.
That's true. Yeah. Creature of the Black Lagoon gets lucky. That's really what that movie was. Yeah. All those flippers just like, flipping and flopping.
Oh my God.
Sorry, we should probably move on. So let's talk about D23 reveals. Okay. So we're going to go through D23 was last week, and if you don't know, basically Disney got sick of going to Comic-Con outside of Marvel. And we talked about Marvel's reveals on a recent Comic-Con episode, so if you want all of those, which were recapped kind of here, we're not going to go back and redo those. But in that Comic-Con episode, there are some Marvel reveals. But Disney's still biggest studio production company going still, and they've got a lot of big movies coming out. So we're going to go through them and see what's getting people excited. And the first...
Bob Iger took the stage. That's the most important.
Okay, what did Bob Iger... Tell us what got you excited about...
Just that Bob Iger was there, and Bob Iger's like, we're going to right the ship, people, and we're just going to drop like the whole freaking enchilada on Friday night, because holy crap, there was so much on Friday night.
He's good. He's good, man. He kind of... I mean, he made that company what it was, what it is, and...
I'm really glad he's back.
Do you think if he would have been there from the get-go, the Marvels would have done better? Because I know a lot of people trash on the Marvels. I think that was a far superior film to Captain Marvel.
Well, the movie itself was fantastic. I really enjoy it. And yes, it is far better than the first Captain Marvel movie. So I think, yeah, if he was there, it would have been better.
I think the Marvels suffered from the fact of MCU fatigue is really what I think is really the challenge. I don't think Bob Iger would have made a difference on that one. I think there were... underwhelmed by Captain Marvel, and so the Brie Larson hangover plus the multiverse and the just oversaturation, I think, is what hurt that movie.
Well, first up, let's talk about what is coming out, what was announced. On June 13th, what a great day, 2025, there's a movie called Elio.
Hello.
Hello. The film follows Elio, an underdog with an active imagination who finds himself inadvertently beamed up to the Communiverse, an interplanetary organization with representatives from galaxies far and wide. Mistakenly identified as Earth's ambassador to the rest of the universe and completely unprepared for that kind of pressure, Elio must form new bonds with eccentric alien life forms, survive a series of formidable trials, and somehow discover who he is truly meant to be. And this goes back to, Troy, you've got this personal theory that if you want Pixar to be successful, it's got to open around Father's Day, and this is doing that again.
It absolutely is. And I think that this is an interesting choice to kind of go into like the alien exploration of new worlds and stuff, because I feel like this is a direct competitor then to the DreamWorks movie with the robot. I forget what the name of that is, but there's like that robot that finds himself like trying to explore his surroundings and figure out what he is, because he's like the last robot alive.
The Iron Robot?
You're trying to say Iron Giant.
Iron Giant, sorry.
The
Iron
Giant. No. There's a brand new DreamWorks movie coming out. Like the trailers were just in front of Deadpool Wolverine this weekend.
The Wild Robot. That's what you're talking
about. The Wild Robot, yes. Yeah. I mean, it's not like timing-wise. Like I think Wild Robot comes out this September, if I remember from the trailer.
Yep.
This doesn't come out, obviously, till June of next year, but I feel it's like that tit-for-tat kind of thing.
All right, moving on to... Hoppers. Spring 2026, Hoppers' Pete Docter took the stage at D23 on Friday to throw a clip out. So we got to take a little peek at Hoppers. It's about a human and a beaver who exchange brains, and it keeps in the spirit of Pixar getting into the sensitive sides of both. And the clip that they showed was about two female scientists telling a young woman named Mabel that they want to put her brain inside the beaver. And there's a shot of a beaver running around. So it sounds right up your really disgusting mind. John, are you excited for Hoppers?
Oh, yeah.
Somebody pitched that to Bob Iger or somebody at some point.
You know, I read that to myself, and it didn't have the same effect of when you read it. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Oh, I don't mean to take it down the innuendo road, but that's kind of funny. I think the idea is fun, though. It has got John Hamm and Bobby Monahan in it, so it could be a really great thing. And John Hamm's always a fun time, even if it's just his voice. So, I'm okay with this.
It sounds really fun and lots of, I'm sure, adult-themed jokes.
I can't
imagine. If you can't have him out of that concept, I don't know what you can have him out of.
It's not safe. It's not safe for anyone right now.
Troy, are you a fan of Hoppers?
Well, no, I was actually really disappointed in this announcement, because when I saw hoppers come on stage, I was like, yes, this is about Hopper the Grasshopper from Bug's Life. We're getting a Bug's Life 2 sequel. And oh my gosh, we're going to see Hopper's family and like what happened in the aftermath of him getting run out of town or whatever.
That makes
sense.
He
was eaten by a bird.
I know. This is like the prequel of like
Kyle Hopper. Or he could save. He somehow survived by, you know, yeah. Dropped out of the bird. I could totally see them making a sequel to it.
But then it was like, no, it's about robot beavers. I'm like, what the?
Where do you see robot beaver anywhere in here?
Yeah, that's what's like. It's literally about her going into a beaver and then she befriends the beavers because they're trying to stop a real estate developer from taking over the animal kingdom.
Oh, okay. Transfers her brain into a robot beaver in order to live among real beavers. So it's an artificial beaver. Sorry. I guess that makes it worse.
It makes it worse. It's a pocket rocket beaver.
Oh my god. All right, so the brain goes into a robot beaver and that's how they're going to use that to try to save the real beavers, I guess.
Does the beaver look like a flashlight?
Stop. Moving on from that. Jesus. All right, here's some cool news I was pretty excited about. Number one, you get a Hercules musical coming to West End. Okay, cool.
That's badass.
Yeah. Frozen Live is hitting Disney Plus in 2025, so next year you're going to get some Frozen Live, which, hey, we love Hamilton, so that's kind of cool. But most importantly, most excitedly, The Greatest Showman is coming to Broadway. So
that's badass.
That makes
it was such a great reveal too.
How's that? I didn't watch it live. So
was it?
Yeah, they basically had the music playing and they had the people actually producing it. And so when it's like this is the show you've been waiting for. Like when it hits that drop. It was like, and then it just like flashed up on the screen. Boom, musical coming soon. It was like, yes. It was like perfectly timed.
That's awesome.
And they had the main lead, who's going to be the lead on Broadway, actually singing the song present on stage at that moment for the reveal.
It's really something that it feels like it should have been a musical to begin with before it ever became a movie, right? Like there's not many movies that are so well suited to the stage, because the songs are fantastic. There's not really that much movement in terms of sets. I mean, you circus set, then you go overseas a little bit, but you can do all that on a stage pretty simple. And the songs are all so memorable. So, I mean, you're going to go on Broadway and people are just going to go nuts singing the songs themselves while the thing is going on, which is, you know, that kind of interactive. It's very similar to the Hamilton effect, right? People love seeing Hamilton because they knew the songs. And I think this will have some of the same fandom, just went the other way.
Yeah, I mean, and the big thing with this one too is that it's actually the songs were done by Benj Pasek and Justin Paul, who did La La Land, who did Dear Evan Hansen, who did Spirited. So I mean, these guys are typically writers for Broadway type things. And granted, some of those were movie based, some of them were on stage. So it's just interesting that it never was like on stage to begin with. So they started with the movie. So now I really just want to see a La La Land musical is really what I'm saying.
I would watch that. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Things like that. Or Wonka. Good. Wonka.
Yeah.
Well, you just keep your ants to yourself, right? Captain Buzzkill. Cause that movie's great. So moving on. Zootopia 2. It's hitting cinemas over the Thanksgiving break on November 26, 2025. Just want to mention it. It's already been announced and been worked on, but in case you didn't know, Zootopia 2 is coming. Excited? Anybody for this? I don't. Zootopia was fine.
It was fine.
It was a one and done.
Yeah, agreed. Title for Avatar 3 is Fire and Ash. So just throwing that out there so you know.
Shocker.
Yeah, I thought they mentioned this before, didn't they?
They mentioned fire people before, and that's when we were all like, oh yeah, just rip off the original Avatar. It's fine. We get it.
All right. Well, this is exciting news. Incredibles is the first two films are beloved. Brad Bird is a director who is just absolutely adored in animation, and he is returning to this franchise with Incredibles 3. So we are getting a third one. Finally. Now that's exciting. Yes. Are we all excited about that one? Cause I'm pretty, this is one of the few animated franchises I really dig.
I'm pumped. I can get behind this for sure.
Yeah. Cause I can get behind it as long as it's like goes in a completely different direction, I guess.
Really? Cause you wouldn't go see it if it did the exact same thing as the second one.
I can actually, get
I
behind it.
Honestly, I wouldn't go see it if it did the exact same thing as the second one.
Okay.
Why? I wasn't super sold on the second one. I really enjoyed the first movie. I thought the first movie was creative and original. And then the second one just felt like a, cash grab.
Aren't they all?
Is it because the mom was in charge
the second one? No, it had nothing to do with that at all. Do not even bring that into the equation, because you're going to have like hate mail for days.
Wow.
No.
What was lacking though? Like what? Because I liked the second one a lot. What didn't you like about it?
I liked the story. It just didn't have like the like wow factor. You know, it felt like I liked Cars. I hated Cars 2. Cars 2 is trash. Mm-hmm. I liked Cars 3. Cars 3 was a nice like continuation of the original Cars 1 story. It kind of like brought it back home. It felt like it was right and it fit kind of thing. Incredibles 2 was like that. It was it was great. It was like an extension of the franchise, but it wasn't like, wow, like Incredibles 1, I was on the edge of my seat the entire time. So if Incredibles 3 is coming, I want Incredibles 3 to feel like Toy Story 3 did.
So
literally, I was on the edge of my seat the entire time.
I can understand. So wait a minute. You liked Cars 1. You liked Cars 3. But to get to Cars 3, you had to sit through Cars 2, which you hated.
Can we just
say that you would get behind an Incredibles 3? Because you're going to watch it anyways. Because you didn't hate any of the first two.
Well, I feel like I have to. I'm like beholden to Pixar to watch it now. I have like a codependent relationship with Pixar. Like,
well, they are sending you checks. You know. So...
Although I still have not seen Red Panda, so
it wasn't called Red Panda. Turning Red.
See, I don't even know the name of the movie because I couldn't come to watch it.
I haven't seen that one either, but I haven't seen many animated movies, so that's not really saying a whole lot.
Yeah, Aaron is very well known for coming right out and saying I hate animated movies all the time.
Literally never said that, but I just don't.
He says they're trash and they're for babies.
No, I was talking about you. I said, you're trash and you're for babies. That's what I was. That's when we were having that conversation. Remember, you were drunk. You don't recall what I was saying. That's the order of the words.
It sounds the same to me.
It does in your mind. Yeah. I know, Charlie Brown.
But this is the thing. Like I know Bob Iger milked that Toy Story 4 because it was like, and I'd like, I don't know about Toy Story 4. And I'm still not like a super sold on a Toy Story 4. Like I liked it. I cried at the end. I thought it was really sweet how he's like transferring the whole Sheriff Star and everything, but it was like, I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen it yet either. You just
come on.
I'm not even sure I've seen 3 yet.
I saw the first 3. I didn't watch Toy Story 4 because Toy Story 3 is ended like, so perfect, and I said I don't need any more, and I didn't go back, and I won't go back for the next one either.
What they don't know is that we're like in this Pixar thing, so we'll just jump right into the fact that Toy Story 5 is coming. Yes,
I quit.
It's going to be toys versus electronics, and what happens when the kids decide to do electronics instead of toys.
Yeah, and it's coming September 2026. So they are ready with the sequels, guys. Bob Iger's like, we're going to save the studio with sequels. That's what we're going to do. Sequels and remakes, we're going to do it.
I love this. We're going to save the studio. We ain't suffering in any way, shape, or form, but we're going to save the studio. We're actually buying other studios, but we need to save this one.
No, let's be clear. Pixar was flopping around. Like they were very close to having serious problems because they were having movies go to Disney Plus where they cost $200 to $300 million and they were not turning a profit on Disney Plus. Still aren't.
Yeah. They were really struggling. Let's remember. I mean, I like Soul. I think Soul is a really good movie.
There were several very good movies that just did not make any money. Soul was very good. I had never saw Lightyear, but I heard some people actually liked Lightyear, but it didn't do very well even in theaters. Like they have not been on a good path for the last, since COVID.
Right.
4 years.
And then Inside Out killed the summer.
Since Disney Plus came along.
And then you know what Disney said? Disney said, hey, Inside Out 2 did such a great job. Let's Marvel the shit out of this and Star Wars the shit out of this. And let's make an Inside Out TV show that bridges the two movies together.
Man, Troy wants to get this thing moving. He's like, yeah, let's get to this topic. Let's get done with D23. Yeah.
No, I'm very,
I like it. You're moving. Let's go.
This whole Pixar thing is like I get behind a Toy Story 5 because you started Toy Story 4. And we ended the Andy trilogy. Now we're into the Bonnie trilogy. So you're going to give me Toy Story 6 because I need the end of the Bonnie trilogy. So I just expect Toy Story 6 to be coming summer of 2030. But yeah, the TV show for Inside Out, man, I don't know. Like, I love the characters. I love to be in that spot. I just don't know if I need a TV show version of that. I think it dumbs it down.
Yeah. And for people that don't know, it's set in the studio where Riley's dreams are made every night, on time and on budget, by the way. And that was something that, that Pete Doctor made sure to point out. And I don't want this. To me, this is the natural evolution of what Disney does, right? They dilute. They dilute everything into just an inescapable franchise. They'll be so much merchandising and spinoffs and yada, 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 which is, don't get me wrong, I think Inside Out 1 and 2 are two of the best animated films of the last 10 years. Personally, I believe that. I just think they are absolutely both fantastic, which is why I don't want them diluted with a Disney Plus TV show. Keep in mind, I'm never going to watch it, and I still don't want it for kids, because I want them to be excited when a new one comes out, and I want them to really pay attention, because those two movies are so good at teaching people about psychology. If you really, really just pay attention, and you start diluting it, and it just becomes about commerce.
Right. I mean, at this point, why don't we just make Up 2?
Ooh, can the wife come back somehow? Like, in the first 5 minutes, the wife somehow comes back to life?
Why don't we just have, you know, an Ellie adventure and just have a story about Ellie? It's a prequel.
There you go. Sure, why not? Or we tie it kind of, I mean, Deadpool and Wolverine, right, has kind of like resurrected Disney this summer, Marvel this summer. Maybe you get a little bit of a tie in there, and you get, he's got Ellie's corpse and he takes her for a balloon ride. And that's how.
Is James Wan directing this one too?
Yeah, that would be great. I would watch that movie. I guarantee I would see it then. Up, up, and away. Just call it that.
It's actually called Down. They go to Australia this time.
Oh, see, you tried too hard on that one. You tried.
Just send me to the void. I'm good.
May 2020. Somebody finally saw Deadpool and Wolverine. May 2020. By the way, did you like it? Are you going to come in as, are you going to be the contrarian here? Is that what you're going to do?
I'm on two sides of the coin. I loved it because I understood everything that was in it and what happened, because I know all the backstory and stuff.
Sure.
As a film, it goes absolutely nowhere. So it's a horrible movie, but it's a great fan service.
You know, being you, I'll just take it as I'll take the win.
Yeah. Just
everything about it is awesome. But I mean, if you look at it from a critical standpoint, it's like there's absolutely no story.
Not everything has to be deep. It doesn't have to be Little Women every time. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes you can just have a fun movie.
The thing with that movie is I feel like you had to have like a dissertation in all things Marvel and Fox in order to actually really enjoy the movie. Now,
I've had this conversation with someone. I don't agree with that at all. I think it adds to the value of the movie if you have all the backstory with Fox. But you don't have to have it. You just have to have some idea that there was a universe, and I think it's fine. But I've seen the movie with people that do not, or not seen the movie. I've talked to people who have seen the movie that had never seen the original Fox movies, and they really dug it. So now we're going to move on to May 2026. Mandalorian and Grogu are in theaters. There's a little bit of a peek at it. There was only 2 days shooting, but they are into it with Jon Favreau directing, who is a great director. And there was a voiceover where Mando said, "We're bounty hunters by trade. Now that he's with me, I'll be selective about my assignment." So it seems to me they're getting strictly away from the TV realm and going into feature films. Do we like this?
Yes. Doesn't even have to be on the, I mean, Aaron will kill me for this, for saying I need to be on a movie screen. But I'm like, just if you're going to do 6 30-minute episodes for 180 minutes, just make it a freaking movie.
Agreed.
Or make it 2 movies.
Even better.
But, you know?
I haven't even finished season 3, so I can't wait to watch the movie. I've said this before, if you've never listened before, I prefer a movie to a TV series every time. Every day of the week and twice on Sunday, as Kevin Pollak would say. And this is something I would love to see in a theater.
Well, we can have that conversation when we get to the outside in topic later about adaptations.
Okay.
And where adaptations belong.
And we got a look at Star Wars Skeleton Crew, which, ooh, yeah, that gets you excited.
This actually gets me really excited.
No. You either have to be like, I am Star Wars out, Star Wars sucks, and stick to your shit, or get the F out, because you can't just pick. Either you understand everything or you cherry pick your little shit. It's fine.
Look,
but you do not get to talk about Skeleton Crew.
All right.
Like, you just go away. Fight.
Hang on. I'm just going to sit back. Go ahead.
You going to take your pants off while we're doing this?
He's like Acolyte. Ugh. Like, why do I need to watch Acolyte?
Yeah, it's bullshit. I don't need that bullshit.
He's not wrong, though, dude. You've been poo-pooing the shit out of anything Star Wars. I'm just saying.
Most things Star Wars. Anything, not anything. Really. Most things. Most things.
Like
most
everything. Things. That is most, the
not everything,
three,
but most three things. Movies,
blah, and then blah, this whatever. One comes along. It's a journey of four kids who make a mistake. Serious discovery on their planet, and then they get lost in some strange and dangerous galaxy. Why is this exciting to you?
Because it feels so very Amblin. It feels so very Goonies. It feels so very like the 80s, and it's a combination of like the 80s and Star Wars, and it just has this great like E.T. kind of feel to it, and I love the way that it felt watching the trailer. It has that Spielbergian kind of like kids and wonder to it, and I'll go for that. I won't watch it because I don't have Disney Plus anymore, but I think it's very cool that they did this the way they did it, and I'm interested very much in to see how they build a story like this, because it feels somewhat different. And I love the Amblin aspect to it.
So if they just put Amblin Entertainment up on the front, you watch the whole movie, and then you get to the end of the movie, and then it said, boom, a Star Wars story, would you be like, oh, shit, they got me?
No. That's kind of funny. Like, I'm going to watch an Amblin movie and see the lightsabers and everything else and go, all right, this would be so weird because it seems so much like, I mean, how dumb am I?
I mean, you watch Rebel that. Moon like 8 times because you watch the extended cuts too, and those had laser swords that are lightsabers.
No, they're not laser swords. They're plasma swords. That's different.
Whatever.
Whatever. That's totally ripping lightsabers. Off Star Wars. Come on. I mean, come on.
Well, it's supposed to be a Star Wars movie originally. It's
R-rated Star Wars. All I'm excited about, yes, I like the kids feel. That's great. Jude Law and Kerry Condon, two actors I really enjoy, so I will watch it for them. And I do like the idea whenever Star Wars does something a little different. I didn't love Acolyte. I didn't. But there's definitely some stuff in there that I thought was very, very interesting. And then, but it was like Troy was talking about when he really talked through it. It's good. It's not great. It's good. It's not. It's very much a roller coaster. I want something even keel. I want Star Wars to feel good across the way. And I think it would be more helpful if they were just movies, because I think the series that they keep doing are doing nothing but diluting the brand to hell.
Right. Because Acolyte's main story was who is in control of the Force, or who has the right to control
the
Force.
It's a cool story that would have been told better in a movie form, my opinion.
100%. 100%.
God, I wonder if they have ever told that story in a book.
See, this is like, look, bitter bitch. All right. So they've, even though they're not counting your precious books, all right, they've used ideas from them in many of the projects that they're doing. So
they've used like whole books. John's not wrong.
See, I'm just saying, like, they've used a lot that's there.
Which, if you liked all that stuff, then why are you poo-pooing on Star Wars so much? You should be like, yes, finally, they're making the stuff that I like.
Because you just got used to it.
I'm in a rut. I don't actually hate anything, but as soon as I start hating something, I feel like I have to commit up until like kids are having fun, and then I'm like, all right, let them have it, and then I'm back to hating it again.
You're a weird guy. You're weird.
Andor season 2 is going to have one of the most fun things to happen in a while.
A plot
that was announced too.
Sorry. what's the fun thing that's going to happen, because I didn't make it past Episode 2.
Cassian and K2SO meet for the first time.
Once again, ooh, they got to bring back stuff from the movies to make the series any good.
Well, it's part of the universe and timeline. So yes, they're going to have to tie that together eventually.
And I still won't watch Andor. And I know people rave about it. I've heard nothing but great things about it.
Andor is up your alley, dude. It's so good.
Dude, I made it 2 episodes and was bored senseless. I do not like the lead. I've told you this before. I do not think he's a good actor. I don't.
I don't even think he's the lead, to be honest.
I don't even think he's a good actor, so it doesn't matter.
I think Mon Mothma got a lot more time.
Cool. I hope you guys enjoy it. Wait, I'm not poo-pooing anybody else's time. I just didn't like it.
The show called Andor?
Uh-huh. Yeah, he's the star. He's just trying to get me to watch it. He's trying to get me to come back to it. He likes to do this, oh, man, look, Oh, that thing you don't like, it's not even there.
It's not even there.
Yeah, don't even look at it.
It's not even a lightsaber thing.
These aren't the droids you're looking for. No.
It's a political drama. It's about how the rebellion starts. It's the behind the scenes of what happens.
I figured it out. I think we're living in it sometimes. All right. And you could take here, that either way like, you want. Either yeah. way you want. Either way you want.
Troy's always like, here, drink this. It'll be fine.
Hey, speaking of drinking this, let's segue to eating an apple. But Snow White dropped the trailer, and we saw the first look at Gal Gadot. And yeah,
you didn't like the trailer.
No, the trailer is not well done at all. I thought the CGI dwarfs or little people, whatever we're going with for this one, because everybody's afraid of saying something wrong.
They're CGI dwarves.
Yes, they look terrible. They just look terrible. This movie has like a $200 million budget, and it looks like the effects are not finished. I have a hard time understanding why Gal Gadot is asking who's the fairest of them all, and she's up against Rachel Zegler's Snow White. And I'm like, look, this is not this is very similar to the Snow White and the Huntsman problem. The evil queen should never have to ask this question, okay? Because we all know the answer. Like you're fine. You're not threatened at all by this scenario. You know, it's like a hot 10 getting threatened by a simmering 6. You know what I mean? It's like I just don't understand it. This movie would have been over in 5 minutes if I was part of it. I would have been like, what are you complaining about? Get look in the mirror.
Aaron's like, did they cast the roles right? Was this on the sheet backwards? I don't understand.
God. Are you okay, buddy? Are you okay?
Arjun's gone. He's gone. The dwarves were on screen in the trailer for like a hot second.
It's
like,
not it's, good though. You got to admit the CGI.
It could be
bad.
Just a preview shot. They just wanted something for D23. It's probably not polished or finished. They're not going to ruin like a Disney classic.
It comes out in March. That is not very far away. It's 6 months away. I'm just saying, if you go watch the trailer for Snow White and just do some, I did like that they played Whistle While You Work in the background. So we got a little of the cartoon vibe, right? That was
you
good.
You got the iconic like log sure, cave sure. shadow had, sequence had a lot in of the back.
Imagery that definitely was pulled directly from the cartoon. But man, as soon as you saw the dwarfs running around, and they kept it pretty quick because they knew, oh, just don't look good. Yeah. I mean, I'm just telling you, Borderlands is blowing the doors off the special effects right now. I'm just saying, people that keep complaining about their effects, this trailer is not looking great. I'm sure it will improve by the time we get
there.
They
spent all the budget on Mufasa, that's why.
That trailer did not look good either. But I also don't need a Lion King sequel, but or prequel, and I hope people get what they want out of both of those films. But did you like Snow White, the trailer, a little bit better than I did then, I take it?
Yeah, it was fine. I mean, it's going to be what we expect. It's going to be the same Cinderella, okay. Beauty and the Beast, shot-for-shot remake. Nothing special, nothing gained. It's just, let's bring it to life for a new audience.
All right, let's wrap this up. D23, Tron Ares, getting a score from Trent Reznor, and you've got Jared Leto in here. I am not a Tron fan. You guys are both fans of the original film. Is this something that you're excited about?
I think so, because they introduced the ISOs being able to come off the grid and live in the real, and so this is going to take place a little bit more in the real, from what I understand. So I think this is going to be a way that they can check the box to say IP still in the Disney threshold and not in the public domain, or go to another studio. I think it'll be fine. I think Tron is still a name that you say Tron and people go like, ooh, Tron. Yes.
Is Garrett coming back for this one?
No. It's going to be, I think Evan Peters is going to be in it, and Jared Leto. No, he's not.
I'm a little disappointed that they're moving on from the characters of Tron Legacy. I don't know. I love Tron Legacy and I love the original movie. I'm not thrilled with Jared Leto and where they're going to take it with him, because I don't remember the last time I've seen him on screen and been like, oh, this excites me, without having to lie to myself a lot. So I don't know.
got Gillian Anderson in it.
I'm in. Never mind.
So there's that. All right. Lastly, Daredevil Born Again officially is coming out March 1st, 2025. That's when season one begins. And they are going to film season two very soon. So they are all in on Daredevil and the gang's all back, and including Punisher and everyone else. So I guess this is kind of a big question, right? So we had Daredevil. It had a decent finish, the original series, and now they're coming back to it. This is the only Marvel thing that really didn't come up too much at Comic-Con. I don't know how I feel about it. I'm more excited about the Punisher coming back than I am Daredevil. How do you guys feel? Is this something, do you worry about the fact that it's going to be Disney-fied, or do you feel it's going to maintain that edge and that gritty feel that the original series had?
I seem to remember, even though I liked the gritty feel of the first couple of seasons of Daredevil, I started enjoying it more when he smiled.
And She-Hulk or whatever?
Yeah. Not even that. Even like the last season of Daredevil, where he started having fun and being a little lighter, that's where I started enjoying it more, because just watching him be broody and bullshitty, it was enough. I mean, I'm broody and bullshitty enough for everybody. I don't need to see it on my TV too. I want to see him be a bit of a lighter character, not too light, because Matt Murdock isn't necessarily the lightest of characters, but I want to at least see him have fun.
You know, when you look back at the Netflix Marvel stuff, Punisher wouldn't exist without Daredevil. So the fact that we're getting Daredevil first just means Punisher could be coming in the future.
Oh, he's going to be in season one.
Yeah.
But I don't know about his own show. So we'll see what happens with that.
We'll see.
All right. Now, our show is independently funded. Therefore, all of our expenses are from our own pockets. If Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcasts. So I want to encourage everybody, if you want bonus content, you can go there. I want to welcome Shelley Crispin to our Patreon supporters. Thank you so much for joining the fray. And you get immediate access to everything in your tier once you sign up. That's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. That's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. We will actually have a bonus episode in the feed while we're gone. So there will be a new episode in that Patreon feed if you want something new. Plus, we just dropped our Bad Movie Night for Twister. Now let's go to a couple spoiler-free reviews. The first is Borderlands. Yeah, I know it's out. It might be gone from theaters by the time you hear this review, but we're going to do it anyway, because we should.
Borderlands coming in at a hot take, 9% on the tomato meter and an audience score of 51%.
I'm part of that 9. Yeah.
It will not even make a Bad Movie Night episode, because nobody likes this.
I did.
Very poor piece of crud movie. Because we knew a video game adaptation. We told you last week that this probably wasn't going to do well. But apparently Aaron liked it. I don't know why. So Aaron, why did people enjoy Kate Blanchett running around looking like a bounty hunter with a mysterious past, reluctantly returning to her home on Pandora to fight along with a bunch of ragtag people to make things happen? Like, what was it about this movie that you said, yes, I'm going to go against everyone else in the universe?
Well, number one, I saw it. That helps, because most of the people on the internet did not, including yourself. So as you're talking about this piece of trash, you haven't seen it. So let's play that quiet game, or what the other game that I like to call shut the fuck up. So Borderlands is based on a game that I played religiously. That's why I wanted to see it. And yeah, I'm not surprised it didn't do well. In fact, I want to thank one of our listeners real quick while I'm thinking about Ruthie, who made sure to send me a message and point out that she found a quote of mine from February 28th, 2020. And on the episode about classic movie monsters, we were talking about the Borderlands movie was announced. And I said, and I quote, "The video game Borderlands is getting a movie adaptation from Lionsgate and Eli Roth that'll make $47. So I'm standing by that. I know what I'm talking about. And somehow, even though I don't think Eli Roth is good as a big budget filmmaker, I don't think he has done anything to show that. I like Thanksgiving, but most of his films, not very good. I've said that for a long time. Him and Rob Zombie are those kinds of directors that love movies and just they have it bleeding from their pores, but they just can't make great ones. They just can't, for whatever reason. It happens, right? But I want to give it a shot because I like the games and I wanted to see what it was. Now, what I will say is I have read reviews of other people since I got mine posted in Rotten Tomatoes to bring that score up, huh? because it started at zero. Now we're at 9. So we're a movement now. The critics are a movement. Not a very big one, but we're a movement. So I wanted to see what they did with it. I knew it wouldn't be a faithful adaptation. And I'm a big fan of when you review a film, you have to review the movie that they give you, not the one you wanted. And unfortunately, most of what I have been trashed on since I wrote this review, and I knew that was coming, because if you go the opposite of whatever the mainstream is doing, boy, you're either trying to be contrarian or whatever. And trust me, nobody wanted to dislike this movie more than me. I walked in thinking this is going to be shit. The trailers look like shit. I said it 4 years ago. This looks like shit. I had a good time because it has the elements of the game. It takes place on Pandora. Yes, they recast with an older cast. I don't know why that's such a problem for everybody, as long as the characters are done well. I don't know how you go wrong with Cate Blanchett to some people, just because it's not the Lilith you play on your screen at home. Cate Blanchett is one of the best actresses working in the world. She does fine. Kevin Hart isn't like normal Kevin Hart in this. He's playing it very stoic, and he's trying to be a more down-to-earth Roland. There's a few jokes, but they're all nothing like the heightened, you know, Kevin Hart personality. And then you have Jamie Lee Curtis, and you have Jack Black as Claptrap, which some people are like, why didn't you keep the Claptrap? If you want the original Claptrap, go play the freaking game, because it's apparently what you want. I didn't go to watch the game. I went to watch a movie called Borderlands. That's what I got. I had a good time. Why so many people just want to trash the fact that I had a good time is beyond me. I'm sorry your life sucked more than mine when I left that theater, okay? I was happy. I enjoyed it. I didn't think it was great. I didn't think the writing was overly strong, but it was I like anti-heroes on a mission movies, and that's what this was. It was trying for that Guardians of the Galaxy vibe. Doesn't quite hit those elements, but it was an enjoyable romp.
What did they do in this movie from a video game adaptation perspective compared to, say, other video game adaptation movies?
Was they there anything cast it
different
older.
Or new?
They cast it older, and that's what's offending so many people. They have all this fan casting going on everywhere on the internet that they should have cast this person, that person. Then go make your own movie. I'm tired of hearing this with movies that are overly praised and overly trashed. This was somewhere in the middle, and that's what it should have been respected as. It didn't do wonders. It's not as bad as so many video game movies that I've seen over the years. So it should have went R-rated, I will tell you that. That's one thing it should have done if you played the games. It just works better, and I think that probably would have made a little bit of a difference, because that's some of the fun of Borderlands is the never-ending gun selection, right? That's a highlight of it. And also the rampant gore and jokes. So heighten a little bit of the one-liners, amp up the R rating, and I think you, and of course, deliver on the multitude of guns. Everybody's got to have various guns, just never ever changing. Then I think you've got a really good movie. It was just an enjoyable movie. I had a good time with it, actually.
Pandora look good? Did it look like the games? Did it make it at least the environments look okay?
Okay, let me ask you a question. It was a desert. It looks like Mad Max. What is fucking impressive about the game? I'm not pointing at you, but I've heard this from other people. Well, they didn't even get the world right. It looks like a trash heap in a desert. Yes, it looks just like it. It's not an impressive game visually. I'm sorry, it's not. That game rips off Mad Max like crazy. Now, don't get me wrong. George Miller would have made a better Borderlands movie. Like, Furiosa is very close to what I would expect a Borderlands movie to look like. But we got Eli Roth. You got a little bit of Tim Miller. He did reshoots. So you got the bargain basement version of Mad Max. And it's fun enough.
So are you sticking to your rating? $10 full price admission. You gave it
$6. Yeah. Had a good time. My wife gave it a 7. She liked it even more. And then I showed her on the internet where people were trying. She's like, I don't know what they saw. I'm like, oh, they saw their hopes and dreams fade away. That's what they saw.
They saw the movie they wanted, not the one they got.
All right. Thank you.
You okay?
No, I've been, you know what? Whenever you go against the grain, it's always difficult, because I knew as soon as I enjoyed it, I'm like, oh God. And I already said I'd write a review about it. I just assumed it was going to be terrible. And I'm sure it helped. My expectations were literally in the cellar, but I still had a good time. And the few people that were in the theater had a good time with it too. So now I'm done.
All right. Do you want to talk about a little movie called Skincare that comes out on August 16th?
I do. It's coming exclusively to theaters. Let's do it.
All right. So Skincare, a famous facial. It's
you haven't gotten three words, John. Three words.
Damn it, Troy. A famous facialist, Hope Goldman's skincare business faces sabotage when her rival, Angel Vergara, opens a boutique across the street. Aided by a new friend, Jordan, Hope seeks to uncover who's trying to ruin her reputation. Stars Elizabeth Banks, Lewis Pullman, and Nathan Fillion, and it's directed by Austin Peters. What the hell kind of movie is this, Aaron?
It is a... It's very interesting. It's this woman has been basically doing facials and makeup and whatnot in the Hollywood scene for decades, and she's trying to launch a brand. Right, she finally is putting all her money into launching a brand, and then for some reason, someone seems to be trying to destroy her. Like there's just several things keep happening. First, there's an email that is sent to all of her contacts that just reads very depressed and deprived. And depraved. And then, you know, she starts feeling like she's being followed and stalked, and you know, it starts affecting her business. And then the angel across the street, his business is booming and he becomes a celebrity. And it's right at the time when she needs the promotion and accessibility to Hollywood outlets the most. So that's the film is really about a woman who has worked her whole life to get somewhere in the Hollywood scene and then is having it all stripped away from her, and she can't figure out who or why. She thinks she knows, and she's trying to get to the bottom of it. But so it's a comedic thriller, I guess is what I would call it.
Okay, great. Any of the performances jump out at you?
Yeah, Lewis Pullman is actually a very good actor, and you know, he's Bill Pullman's son, and he's starting to really find his rhythm, and he's got a very multifaceted part in here. I think it's really enjoyable. You never know whether to like him or hate him at any given moment, you know, so there's always that itch in the back. You're kind of going, I wonder about this guy. And then you've got Nathan Fillion, who actually gets to play against type for once. He's kind of sleazy and also just absolutely fake. And he's very Hollywood is what it is. But really, Elizabeth Banks, this might be the best performance I've seen from her in a film ever, honestly.
Wow.
Yeah, she's I think she's more known as a comedic actress, but can we all agree on that?
Absolutely.
Okay. It starts very much in that vein. She's someone who's trying to be genuine. She's funny, etc. And then as things they spiral more and more out of control, she starts kind of losing it and becoming just neurotic and angry and just disheartened with where she is in life. And, you know, it looks into aging and that sort of thing. And I think she just nails it, because it's so many emotions throughout the movie. I was really, really surprised with how well I thought she carries the movie, really.
Okay. And so why don't you just let us know what you hated about this movie?
I didn't hate anything, but I will say I do think it's predictable in some ways. You can figure out what's going on fairly easy if you pay attention, but I still enjoyed the performances enough and the tone and the director, director Austin Peters' version of this, and how he kind of kept things anxious and tense really works for the movie. So I overall was, even though I knew where it was going, I really enjoyed it to the end.
That sounds really promising. Mm-hmm. So if $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give?
$6.50. I liked it better than Borderlands. How's that?
All right. Okay. I'm going to shut up for a little bit.
Okay. Any recent film or TV recommendations you guys want to mention? New stuff that you've seen that you think people should check out?
All right. I do have something I need to say.
Okay.
I bit the bullet and I watched the Snyder Cuts of Rebel Moon this weekend.
Did 14 hours just laying around?
I'm unemployed, so I don't have anything but time on my hands at the moment.
6 hours. It's 6 hours.
Yeah, it's 6 hours. To be fair, I did take breaks during the first one. Like, I went to sleep one night. I was like, all right, well, it's time to go to bed. I did take breaks. I didn't sit down for the full 6 hours. But even with taking the breaks and going and getting things done and whatnot, I still found that this story was robbed with the two initial versions of the movie. The action's a lot better in these two versions. Story is a lot fuller in these two versions. I found that there was characters that several times where I'm like, okay, wait, so this character just changes coats for no reason. I mean, aside from the fact that he just doesn't want to be a dick. I don't get it. I need more information. And you kind of get that, the reasoning behind a lot more things. So, you get the motivations, a lot of the characters or the samurais that they're going out and they're picking up, or the Ronins, whatever you want to call them, mm-hmm. as they're bringing them aboard. So you get more of that information. You get a better understanding of smaller things. So there's a lot of smaller details that they bring out that really, amplify the full scope of the movie. And I think they're better than, so much better this way than they were with the shorter versions by far.
Hmm. All right. Well, I'm actually going on a long plane ride soon, so I plan on taking them both and watching at least part of one of them. Even though I don't like to watch stuff like that with no scale, I prefer to see it, you know, on the biggest screen I can.
Yep.
Might not have a choice. It's too long, and you got to find a lot of time for that. But you liked it very much then.
Yeah, I really enjoyed them. I thought they were much better movies, and I'm frustrated by the whole idea that we had to get the first version and then this version, and then now there's this whole other story that we're never going to get, because I doubt Netflix is going to turn around and give them more money to finish this up.
Sure.
Never know. It could be hurting for content at some point. Snyder fans will come, and Snyder fans will be like, hey, everybody, come watch this thing.
Nobody showed up for these two movies.
Because they did their weird strategy and just didn't put out the movie they should have put out.
Can we agree that was a horrible mistake?
Horrible.
It was a horrible mistake.
The idea that you're just going to, well, we're going to release the PG-13 version and then later release the R-rated version. We're going to redo the Justice League idea. I'm like, that was a movement that was an organic movement. You can't replicate that. What a wild thing to try.
Right. It's ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense as to do it this way. There's no grounding for anyone. Justice League made sense. Everyone saw that there was more to it. And it's the Justice League. Everyone knows that there's already more to it before they even go to the movie. This is something that was brand new. The way they did it the first time, you start going, oh, well, this is very derivative of Star Wars, and this is very much of this and that and the other. I don't see, sure, there's the plasma swords and the plasma bolts from the guns and the walkers and stuff like that. I don't look at it and go, this is very much Star Wars to me, because I feel like this is a lot more like, I see more Kurosawa than I do Star Wars. Oh,
that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll release a third version of it where you get to see the extended cuts in black and white.
Why not?
Why not? Why not?
Why not?
Godzilla minus color. I mean, that's okay.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Rebel Moon falls out of orbit. So, Troy, what about you? Anything new?
Yeah, I mean, Pachinko isn't new, but I started watching Pachinko in preparation for season 2 coming up here later in August. So that's actually really, really, really good. Definitely check that one out. But something that I didn't think that I would enjoy, because it is a remake of Time Bandits from the 1980s.
Of course, it's on Apple. You're checking. Cha-ching! Let's do that every time Troy mentions Apple TV Plus. Cha-ching!
But Pachinko was on Apple TV too, but I didn't say it out loud.
Take a shot.
But Time Bandits is actually really, I mean, it's not perfect. There are definitely episodes that are kind of like, eh, and Taika Waititi's kind of a distraction. But for the most part, it's a great family romp. It's a classic sci-fi family journey going, you know, everybody's picking on each other and they just go to interesting places. And I kind of dig it. You know, it's just something different for a change to see a nice family ensemble type kind of show in a sci-fi setting. It's been a while since we've seen something like that.
It's exciting. One thing I will mention, Inside the Mind of a Dog on Netflix.
I started watching that today.
I watched that and yeah, I started watching because puppies. Yeah, that's really the only reason I started watching it. But I got to tell you, it was interesting. It really goes into how they train service dogs and kind of looking at I don't want to say the psychology, but trying to understand why dogs are kind of seen as man's best friend in many respects, like why they bring us so much joy, why what their mannerisms mean, really what their howls, their barks, etc., like what all that means, and again how they train them for to be service animals, and you get to see some of the stories behind that. It's just really, it's really sweet. I mean, it's hard to watch a whole documentary about dogs that are just being lovable and not just being happy the whole time. So if you just want sheer joy because of all the tails wagging, that's something you should check out. Highly recommend it. Now let's go to our From the Outside In topic. Why are movie adaptations so difficult to pull off? You know, we've got two that just came out recently, right? Borderlands and It Ends With Us. They're two recent adaptations where fans didn't necessarily love them as much as they felt they should have. Borderlands, almost on the entire spectrum. But then you've got It Ends With Us, which was financially huge. Like, it did great business. Blake Lively and Ryan Reynolds are owning the cinemas recently. But some of the readers felt like it could have leaned a little bit more into the domestic abuse angles and gotten a little bit away, more away from the romantic comedy angle. So, and I didn't read the book. I don't understand. But TV adaptations have had a better record as of late. Like, video games and book adaptations, they've often really struggled to bring fan expectations to life. So I just want to talk about why is it so difficult. And I get Last of Us, Fallout, these kinds of shows, they have more time to kind of spread things out and develop characters for these more hearty, dramatic fare. But I just don't know why movies struggle with it so much. So I know many people will say people are fans of the material. I'm sorry. I know many people say get people who are fans of the material, but there are a lot of less than great directors. I talked about them earlier, right? Eli Roth, Rob Zombie, those kind of guys who are really big fans. They just can't bring things to life in the same successful way. So what is that secret sauce, Troy? Like, what, when it comes to the fandom, what do they got to do?
The thing they have to remember is that you have a book, right? You look at Audible, the book is 10 hours. The book is 20 hours. Stephen King, the book is 40 hours. And that's really the challenge. You're taking this really long form content where I have time to go deep with the characters. Take 11-22-63 as a great example, right? You have George Amberson and you're like going deep with George and understanding George's plight, understanding George's backstory and the characters that he's interacting with, and you understand their backstories. There's a whole section of the 11-22-63 TV show where they have to cut out chapters of the book because there just isn't enough time to tell it in 8 episodes. And a lot of people even there was like, that's some of the best stuff of the book because of the time he spends in Jory and the time he spends working with the high school students. And it really flushes out that character a little bit more. That's like one episode of the TV series. And actually the 11-22-63 TV series, when it's all said and done after 8 episodes, it lands where it's supposed to land fairly decently. So it's like you have to make choices as to what you're going to take out of the source material because you have to have it be developed for a particular medium. In that same example, there's a character in the book of 11-22-63 that ends up being only part of the story and doesn't actually go with George to Dallas to save JFK. Because in the book, George is literally talking to his own conscience a lot of the time. Well, guess what? When you have a TV show, talking to your conscience doesn't really work for TV medium. You need to have someone for George to talk to. So this character that doesn't go with him to Dallas in the book goes with him to Dallas in the TV show. And that's when people are like, well, that's not happening in the book, but you need it for TV. Are you going to
talk about movies anytime soon?
Well, you need it. I'm just saying, you need it for that TV adaptation. So now let's take movies, right? I went from having the ability to take a 40-hour book, condensing it down to 10 hours. Now I got to take that and condense it down to 2 hours, 2 hours and 10 minutes. And it's like that cuts out a lot of the story from what you're taking from a book and putting it into a movie. And so the director really has to understand, number one, the medium. How do I visually tell this story and have it make sense over a 2-hour period? How do I give the characters that I spend 40 hours with to develop their backstories and their plights and their reasonings and all of that. How do I do that in 15 minutes? Because that's what I have after the opening credits. And so you have to have someone that can understand how to craft and cut and shape the best parts that make sense for the medium. That's hard to do, right?
Is it, though? I mean, don't you think we overthink it? I mean, honestly, as fans, I think if you love a huge fan of Jack Reacher, right? Huge fan. And I'm going to speak just to the movies, because we already said TV's doing it really well. They have a lot more time to play with. So your mm-hmm. whole point, you could have just said, I concur. But, you know,
yeah,
you're Troy. I understand. But you take the movies like of Jack Reacher, right? The essence of the character is there. You take the first movie. It's big on Netflix right now. If you've never seen it, go watch it. The first film is a great freaking crime thriller. They miss large swaths of who the character was, especially the size, in terms of how big he was, how he becomes an imposing force, which they captured in that show, but I'm just talking about the movie. But it didn't bother me so much because they still had the essence, right? They still had the idea of who you understood why people are still, even take the size out of it, you understand why people are threatened by him, because he can read any room quicker than everybody else, and he's physically capable. Like those two things. He's a brilliant investigator, and he's physically able. And they were able to destroy those, or just demonstrate those things in the movie. So it works, even though it's not exactly what the book wanted. And that's because you have a good writer. Christopher McQuarrie wrote that script. You have a good writer who understands it's really about the essence. You can't have everything you want if you want a movie. You can't. You have to just be able to let some things go. And I think sometimes fans are their worst enemy. Star Wars fans are like that too. I mean, you have people, and I know we're talking about adaptations, right? So I'll try not to go to Star Wars, but some of those books have been adapted and everything else. People have in their minds what they think should be on the screen. And if it's not there, then it failed in some way. And I don't think that is fair.
But there's adaptations that don't work either. Because, I mean, the Lord of the Rings.
Adaptations that are very faithful and don't work.
Yeah, because like the original Lord of the Rings from like the 70s was terrible. Like the Hobbit cartoon was okay, but the Lord of the Rings was bad. It was really bad. So you have to have not necessarily the people that enjoy the property, but you have to have the people that have the ability to pick apart the pieces of the story that make the most sense, that can get the point across as quickly as possible, and yet also fill in like what people love about it, right? They love the songs of Lord of the Rings. They love the battles of the Lord of the Rings. They love the lore of the Lord of the Rings, right? The history. And as long as you can put those pieces in there, you can write a whole new story, if you will, that weaves in those critical elements, and it works, right? It's not going to be faithful adaptation. It's the essence, right? You have to have that, like, what is it really trying to say as a book? What are the main characters of that book? Now let's tell that in the most succinct way possible and hope it hits. And then when you have something that you think will work, you still got to cast it. You still got to market it. You still got to sell it. You got to do all of this stuff. And all of that is what makes movies so much more challenging to adapt, because you have less time. The marketing's super expensive. You got to have schedules for the right actors to be in the thing, because people have a vision of what those actors look like in their heads. And if
that's
you don't
a fan
have,
problem. That
it is a it
very
is a
often
fan
that's
problem.
A fan problem,
but I mean, there's sometimes where it just doesn't work, right?
No disagreement. But there are people who will tell me like Tom Cruise didn't work in Jack Reacher, and I will say you're wrong. I read all those books. He worked fine. He worked fine.
I'll say you're wrong too. I felt like he was great. You guys are touching on a lot of great aspects of what would make, or what it takes to make a good adaptation. You know, you guys have talked about understanding the core essence, storytelling vision, technical skill is something that a director really needs to have, as far as just in pure craftsmanship. And that's why I think directors like Rob Zombie and Eli Roth kind of missed the mark, because they don't have the craftsmanship that a lot of other directors, or some of the other directors who have been more successful, have. But finally, it's emotional intelligence. You know, the best directors can tap into the emotional core of a story and ensure that the film resonates on a deeper level than just, you know, whatever it is. So this requires empathy. It requires the the ability to connect with both the material and the audience. And then finally, with the audience, you also have, yeah, you have to respect that the audience is there. And that's one of the reasons why Peter Jackson was really good at this. Christopher Nolan was really good at this with The Dark Knight, because even though that's not the Batman we grew up with, or that's not anything close to Batman, a lot of people accept his vision of Batman because he tapped into all of those things and elevated the story to an extent that we all felt like he revered and respected it.
I like that emotional intelligence. That's an interesting way to look at it. Now, do you think fans are unreasonable in their expectations by wanting everything that they love brought to screen faithfully? I mean, because I'm going to use Borderlands as an example. That's just because it's recent, right? It was a huge bomb. It's everybody's making fun of it right now. I don't care if I enjoyed it. The mass majority seem to not have, right? So for whatever reason, it's seen as negative. Now, there are people that it should have had this. And I'm like, I played the games, okay? I literally know this world. I've played them all in co-op, nonetheless. So I've played it with people. I played it alone. I know the Borderlands games. It's Mad Max. That's literally all it is with endless guns. You literally could have made the very stripped down, the 1980s version of Mad Max with just more jokes and blood. And I think it works fine as a Borderlands movie. You do not need $100 million budget. You do not need a ton of effects. So why do people feel like they need that kind of, they need that to look like Guardians of the Galaxy, I guess, to bring their game to life? Do you think they're just, do fans bring this on themselves by just expecting too much of it to be perfect?
Yeah, I absolutely believe that they do this to themselves.
We are fans, by the way. We are fans.
We
are collectively calling ourselves names.
You know what? Like we called me out earlier for my irritation with Star Wars. I was a Star Wars fan before they hurt me, and I'll show you guys on the doll later where the Star Wars hurt me. But you know, yes, absolutely, the fans do this to themselves. There's an intense, sometimes when it comes to these properties, you build these intense emotional investments into these properties, and that lead you down these roads of expectations that are impossible to meet. You start developing these fan castings that are impossible to ensure, because you know what Troy was talking about, schedules, timing, any of those things. But also, let's also talk about technical skill. Like some of the artists and actors that they're looking for don't have the technical skill. They just look the part. And what would you rather have? Somebody who has the technical skill or somebody who looks the part? Cate Blanchett, for instance, is kind of both. She kind of looks the part.
And I can't understand the argument, because people are like so pissed that she was cast as Lilith. And I'm like, that would be like being mad. You know, you could tell me Meryl Streep was cast as Indiana Jones. I'm going to wait until the movie opens to check that out and give it a shot, because
absolutely
that's a very talented actor that's in the role. Give him a chance to see if it works for you.
And that just speaks to the level of like immaturity to the people who are complaining about the movie, if you ask me.
Well, I don't want to poop on people that might be listening to the podcast. We need them to come back when we return. So we love you. You're all good. We're talking about the.
You guys are awesome. If you're listening to the go though, you probably don't love the movie, or us.
Fair. Just kidding, Scott. Just kidding. In joke.
Yeah, fan wise, the fans always put themselves in their own way, because the fans have a vision of what they expect, and I think you go in with an open mind. It's a lot different. Like for me, for example. Like I always had a vision of what the white horses look like in the river when Arwen is taking Frodo and trying to escape from the Nazgul. And like,
is this your only reference for movie adaptation? It's Lord of the Rings.
Well, because in that one, like I had ideas of what something looked like in my head, and it turned out to be almost exactly what I looked like. You know, like when I saw the white horses coming down, I always thought it was like the river acting as the white horses. And so when I saw that, I was like, wow, that's really great. That's exactly how I would have done it. And then when I saw Minas Tirith for the first time in Lord of the Rings, I was like, wow, that's exactly how I pictured Minas Tirith to look like. So, but then at the same time, it's like you go to Dune and you're
look
like,
look at Troy and his amazing imagination.
But then you go to Dune and Dune's like, yeah, like this looks exactly like what it's supposed to be. But man, it is boring compared to what the books were. Dune is just as hard to like get through. And it's because they wanted to be as faithful to the books as possible, which makes it not a great movie, because it needs to move much faster if it's a movie.
Second one is much better, by the way.
Much better.
Yeah, it's much better than the first one.
It is.
Visually stunning, but it's just not a movie that that moves at any reasonable clip. My God, that first one is such a drag. So let me put this into perspective. Are you talking about Horizon at all in the future of this? Okay, it doesn't sound like it. So Horizon Zero Dawn, right?
Yeah. That was gonna be the one I was gonna adapt, but sure.
Okay, ahead. Well that's why I was asking. I'll skip it. I thought it might be one. All right, so I'll take a game I love, right? Okay, there's a game I love called Mirror's Edge. Love this game. It's one of my favorite games I've ever played. Very minuscule plot. It's literally just about someone who uses parkour to basically try to save someone. The plot doesn't matter. If they adapted it into a movie, that's a reasonably easy adaptation, right? It's a revenge plot, or it's a crime thriller. It's very simplistic, and it's going to have a lot of parkour. I think it'd be an awesome movie too, by the way. But then you take something bigger, something with a more fantastical element. Like if you tried to adapt Game of Thrones to a movie form, it would be extremely hard to do. You would have to streamline the hell out of it and break it down to the essence of what it is. But you could still make a great film if you wanted to, if you took the time. But fans have to be willing to let some of that stuff go. We all have to. And we're all guilty of it. There's something that we have a hard time letting go. There's The Crow was one that I have a hard time of letting go, because I thought the first movie was a perfect adaptation of the comic, which I love the comic. There are other characters in those comics they could adapt. This should be untouchable at this point. Like, I have a hard time going back to another adaptation. And so every fan has some sticking point with some character that they're not okay with, right? I understand that love. I do. But what I don't understand is the endless need to poo-poo it when you haven't seen it, when you haven't given it a chance, when you already know you don't want to give it a chance. Walk away from it. Like, that is drowning the idea of something that could be successful reaching masses, because people already look at it in a negative light. So fans, in a way, are hurting the chance of getting a reinvention of something they love. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I find it.
I'm processing all that, but yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
So let me ask you before we go into our next question: what is the most important aspect to you? Respecting the original fans and staying as true to the original work as possible, or just making the best movie possible overall? So respecting the fans and their wishes, or just making the best film overall? And you can't do, well, both are important. I get that. Both are important. Absolutely. But if you're stuck in a creative rut and the director has to make a choice, which way do you want them to lean?
I want them to make the best movie they possibly can, because if they're going to make the best movie they possibly can, they're going to inherently respect the audience. They're going to inherently have the emotional intelligence to be able to tell the story correctly. They're going to have the craftsmanship in line. They're going to have everything they need to make it a good movie. So I'd rather them just make an amazing movie.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to like change a character fundamentally to piss the diehards off, but my job is to deliver a movie that's going to make its budget back. So I'm going to put the story and what I'm trying to accomplish and what I need to do to sell based on what the studio told me to do, I'm going to put that well above trying to, like, oh, I got to fit out this one niche thing that Joey behind a keyboard that is going to totally like grill me for, because I didn't put this one tiny little thing in there, because this one tiny little thing is like everything to him or her. Like, no, you have to tell a whole cohesive story that makes sense when someone sits down in the theater that knows absolutely nothing about this property can watch the movie and enjoy it. Because you're gonna get a lot more of those people than the diehards, because the diehards are a small group. You have to mass market the movie to a lot of people.
Yeah, I always want the best movie possible. If you have to lose elements of whatever I loved about it, I'm okay with it. I think a great filmmaker is going to find, again, the essence of the character and or the situation and make the best film possible. And I think you gotta let them do that. I mean, there's definitely aspects of adaptations where I just wish they wouldn't have went that way, and then it turns out to be a great film. I think Shawshank is a perfect adaptation. It added so much that was never there on the page. It added so much to it and really, really fleshed it out and made this fantastic film that The Shawshank Redemption, which is, stood the test of time. And, and then you take The Mist. The Mist is a great example. right? That is a story that doesn't have an ending. It's basically, it just continues on a loop. And what you see in the movie is definitely nowhere close to anything that happened at the end of the book, or novella, if you will. And they chose to give it a very specific, really hard-nosed stop point of view that was seen to many as just unacceptable. But a wonderful filmmaker, same guy who made Shawshank, just so happens, made a choice and committed to it. And man, did it deliver. It delivered in spades.
Oh, so sticks to landing so hard.
Yeah. So I always go for a great film. All right. So take a property you love that has not been adapted yet. Nothing that has already been made into movies or TV show. And say you have to adapt it to one movie, no trilogy, no series, just one movie to get it across the line. Now, if it's successful, of course, you can do more down the road, but you get one movie. How do you do it so that everybody gets what they want?
I mean, well, I would do, because we're not getting it anymore at Netflix, blah, blah. But I would do Horizon Zero Dawn. Horizon Zero Dawn, the video game, has got probably one of the deepest story lores in the game that you could do it as a TV show, but you could very easily do it as a movie as well. I mean, the whole concept behind Horizon Zero Dawn is that the world basically went to shit, you know, thousands of years ago. Humanity basically created this entire computer system, this AI computer system, to basically rebuild Earth, while a very rich few were able to escape and are now out in space waiting to come back to the planet when the planet's ready to go. Some humans were able to survive underground. They come back up to the surface, and now the surface is being controlled by these machines, where the machines were programmed specifically to terraform the Earth and do specific activities in order to make the Earth habitable again. And now the humans live amongst these machines. Sometimes the machines attack, sometimes they don't. But basically, it's about discovering the world again, and you can make that a complete adventure very easily in a movie form, where you're going from tribe to tribe to tribe. And then as your person going from tribe to tribe to tribe, learning more about the history of the old ways. And as that old way history is found out, you get to the point where you're like, oh, this is why these machines exist. And by the way, someone's trying to control the machines. That ends up being the big bad. And all of a sudden, boom, war breaks out because of it. But because of the tribal boundaries and people you've met along the way, you now have all the tribes fighting against this one person who is trying to use the machines for evil. So it's very much a story that could be done in a 2.5 to 3 hour movie, and not necessarily done as a TV show, and it would still make sense. But I definitely think you need the right, obviously, lead actress for the role, right? Aloy is a female redhead. That role has to be, you know, perfectly cast. Like a Sadie Sink would be amazing in that role. Mm. And then, unfortunately, the guy that plays the bad guy is no longer around in Broyles from Fringe, Lance Reddick. So you'd have to find someone that could be as capable as Lance Reddick. But if you cast those two roles very closely to what the video game had, I think you'd be fine, with everybody else being cast as like no names. But really, it's the lore of the old ones that's really coming out through that discovery. And you could do that through a movie very easily. It's like a Goonies adventure type thing, but an adult version of a Goonies adventure.
Okay. I want to watch it. Mine would be, I would take Gears of War. That's my favorite video game that has yet to become a movie. I know that they've talked about it. I think Netflix is supposed to be working on one. We'll see if it ever happens. But Dave Bautista has long been campaigning to play Marcus Fenix from that game. And the game itself is really about the squad led by Marcus Fenix, who, you know, they start busting out of jail, and then they have to go on this crusade, this campaign, to kind of end a war against the subterranean locust. They're basically enemies that come from below the Earth's surface on their home planet of Syrah. Now, it is a balls to the wall action franchise. The whole idea is shoot, 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 kill, 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 right? Like, that's basically what it is. They have a chainsaw on the end of their gun. It's fantastic. It's visually, I'm sure, ridiculous in a movie, but I think it would also be freaking awesome. And I would love to see that brought to life with someone who could add not only the action beats and the violence and, you know, the visceral tension, because it's a very tense game, and there are a lot of set pieces that are a little bit more puzzle oriented or attention based than say just a straightforward third person shooter. But somebody like Gareth Evans, I think, would be a great director for something like that. Just somebody who could handle the special effects. It's a lot of special effects. And you throw someone like a Dave Bautista in there, because I think Dave Bautista is a much better actor than people often give him credits for. And, you know, and then you just find a motley crew of meatheads to fill out the cast, because this is not dramatic fare. This is very much a bros on a mission situation. And I would love to have kind of like a, if you have somebody with a Gareth, like Gareth Evans, you have more of a Saving Private Ryan in a ridiculous video game shooter environment. And I think that could be a combination of greatness that could be formidable. I would love to see that.
That sounds badass. I like it.
Sweet. What about you, John?
Yeah. There's a story from Neil Gaiman. It's called Neverwhere. Neverwhere follows Richard Mayhew, an ordinary Londoner who is upended when he helps a mysterious woman named Dor. This act plunges him into this hidden world of the London below. So he's in London and there's London below, a dark magical realm that existing beneath the city, filled with strange characters, deadly dangers. There's angels, there's all sorts of crazy things. It's Neil Gaiman, so it's going to be nuts. Richard navigates this unfamiliar world. He embarks in a quest to help Dor discover who murdered her family, and in encountering sinister forces, facing his own fears along the way, he ultimately must decide whether he's going to stay in this city or if he's going to go back home. So What I would do is, I, as far as how to adapt it, because it is a pretty hefty story, center the story on Richard's journey from an ordinary life to London below. I would then streamline the plot to be primarily around Richard's relationship with Dor and the mysteries of her life. I would condense the key roles that are in the story from characters. There's Hunter and there's the Marquis de Carabas that's in the story. Condense their roles, be more of a tip of the hat to those characters versus like here they are. I would preserve a lot of the dark humor and wit that Neil Gaiman brings to his writing, and then use a super strong visual style to depict the London below, emphasizing the atmosphere and overall exposition. And the things that I would think would be more important to tell the story right is really focus on the themes of identity, belonging, and Richard's personal growth. I would actually try to get Neil Gaiman is as involved in this as much as possible, because I want to make sure that it maintains the fidelity to the source material. And of course, there's some spots where the story slows down, like it does, because hey, it's a long story, you know, so make changes for pacing. And then I would aim for a blend of dark fantasy and relatable human experiences to appeal to both fans and newcomers. So that's the way I would do it. I don't have like a cast or a director in mind for any of these, but this is where I would start as far as like a outline.
Okay, that sounds good. I'm into it. Anything that listeners mentioned in the topic, which we always post in the Facebook group?
I don't have Facebook on my phone, so I have to go look quick.
Ruthie says something interesting. Ruthie says, not all source material would make a good movie adaptation, although I'm not sure that it's necessary, that that's necessarily the case with these two movies, talking about the movies that mentioned, which is Borderlands and...
It Ends With Us.
Sometimes a book is just better as a book. However, there have been times where I thought the movie was better than the book. Oh, and then she wrote a book after that.
The overall point is sometimes it's not meant to be adapted, and sometimes you just have to accept it.
Yeah, and I believe in that. There are things that are just not going to be adaptable, because it should live in its own world, away from the visual media, because we don't have the technology to make it happen. We don't have the actors to make it all happen. I was recently thinking about this because I know that I've said this on several occasions, where I would love to see a readaptation of the Dresden Files novels. Mm-hmm. And I started thinking about it the other day, where I'm thinking, you know what, why don't we do it animated as opposed to just do it you know, in a movie. Do it animated, do it in the style of that they're currently working on the Vox Machina movie or TV show. That's what I think they should do at this point.
I mean, Ty Nelson was pretty much on my angle of that, you know, a book really has that ability to go deep with characters. It goes deep with backstory. It goes deep with settings in a way that's really hard for a movie to then take that setting, which has a lot of descriptive capability in a book, and then visually show that in a way that people are going to resonate with what they thought they would see inside of a book itself. He goes on to say video games are also about being interactive. So there's a set story, but the player actually drives the action. So now you have to have this one director trying to play a video game the way everybody would play the video game in order to get that to adapt over to the movie side. The TV has the better advantage because of the longer runtime that they can do. If you're going to adapt anything, comics are always the best thing to adapt because comics are already a visual medium. So therefore, the comics translate to movie a lot easier than, say, a book would.
Well, and Michael Weinreich kind of echoed the whole time situation, so he's in agreement there. But Becky Trumbo said, the filmmakers already care about the characters or story and forget they have to make audiences care about them too. That is not just a given. Or because they love the source material, they take it too seriously and end up missing what makes it fun. I think it's an interesting thing to point out because, yeah, I mean, I do think sometimes when they're adapting a popular component, like they're adapting a big video game or a huge book, sometimes the writer or filmmakers, they don't put all the work into making the characters relatable for people that have no idea who the hell they are, you know?
Right.
And that's what I think sometimes as fans, we want to be catered to, right? Like, we're the fans, make this for us. But there's so many people that have no idea who this person is. And maybe there's a different way that they want to take the character that you were already got to play as or read about. So maybe that's the better option. So, you know, there are different ways to look at that, I think, for sure. But that's an interesting point too. Interesting stuff. I love it. What do you guys feel like one kind of thing is harder to adapt than all other things? Like books, comic books, and video games?
Into a movie specifically?
Yeah, into a movie.
Books to movie is definitely the hardest thing to do.
Why do you say that?
Because just exactly from what Ty was saying, it's I have the ability to, like, when I think about Stephen King books, and like, I know exactly what Chester's Mill looks like because of the descriptiveness he spends the time to give me, like, this is where this is located, and I know exactly how far it is to walk from A to B because he explains how far it is to walk from A to B. So if to visually recreate that, you may not have that capability to have that same distance or that same thing, because they have to, the walk has to be 2 minutes in the movie because it got 2 minutes to hit the next beat. So I think there's a lot that goes into trying to take a long book and make it into a short movie. Short books, 100 pages, sure, probably a lot easier to make into a movie. But the things we like are definitely more long form in books, and that's really hard to do in 2 hours.
I find it funny fascinating what you said there, because video games show you the places and whatnot. Like, they give you comic books, they show you. But on the same token, I think there's a difference. You can adapt a comic book or a video game, and people will know immediately if you got it right or wrong, right? Based on,
right,
because you can see it. In a book, it's all up here. It's all up in our head. We all have a different, even though it's written the same way, everybody reads it the same way, I guarantee you every single person sees many of those aspects differently. They have a different, and that's the beauty of books, really, is it becomes your world no matter what. And so you have this visualization of what that world is and what everything should look like. So I agree with you in terms of the impossibility. It's much harder to adapt a book than the other two. John, but you got an opinion here?
You'll probably get crucified more if you get the other two wrong.
Well, yeah, they showed you pictures of it. Jesus Christ, how could you not get that one right?
I mean, everything that you guys have said is exactly what my opinion would end up being. So control C, control V.
All right. And that means we are at the end, kids. We're going to go on a little summer sabbatical here.
Vacation.
Are you doing anything fun? I'm going to Alaska. What are you guys doing?
I am going to be biking from the northwest suburbs of Chicago around the lake, past the dunes, to Notre Dame and onward to the border of Ohio over Labor Day weekend.
That's fun.
Yeah, 280. I think 280 miles or so, I think, is the total.
That sounds less fun.
That sounds exhausting.
Yeah, there's a car. Take the car. It'd be so much faster. Yeah.
Yeah, but there's a lake on the other end. So when we get to the lake on the other end, we're going to like swim in.
But you could like, here's an idea. All right. So you go to the start line, you ride your bike like 5 miles. Your wife picks you up. You drive to the lake and you drop yourself off 5 miles before. And then you finish it out. You still got a good workout and you get there so much faster than everybody else. You're already on the lake.
But you didn't get to say you biked across your third state of the 48 contiguous.
Take a wheel off your bike, take it into the car and just pretend like you're pedaling the whole time. Whatever. It's the same thing.
It's a mess of records for that speed.
Wait, hold on. You know what? Watch this, Troy. I biked across my third state. I could say it. I didn't do it. I can still say it.
You can also say you hate Star Wars and then backtrack your shit.
Oh!
I didn't backtrack. Oh. I just said I have an appreciation. I can sit there and still not be happy with Star Wars, but still show an appreciation for something that looks cool and interesting that they're doing.
Are you doing anything?
I can do that.
Are you doing anything this summer? What's left of the summer, John?
What's left of the summer? No, I'm doing absolutely nothing with what's left of the summer. I got to deal with a couple of alligators. You know, turn. Let's, oh, let's we're going back right to back to that.
Alligators. Okay, so we're gonna have a new saying when we come back, right? New one?
No, I'm just gonna keep on bringing that up every other minute.
That would be great.
Yeah, I think everyone would love it. it'll be a good time.
All right. Well, that's going to do it. I want to thank everybody for listening all summer as you have, and really, really do appreciate it. Hope you've had a good time with the show. And
thank you for getting us nominated.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah.
Holy shit. Shame on us. Shame on us. We were nominated for best.
I remembered. I was just waiting for the end.
I didn't write it down. So obviously I'm stupid.
Twice. Yes.
Thank you for remembering The Hollywood Outsider and Inspired by a True Story. We were finalists in the podcast awards this year for best TV and film for The Hollywood Outsider and best true crime for Inspired by a True Story, which is our first year doing that show, which is awesome.
Which is, of course, going to win because I didn't want to do it. And then I'm going to be like,
and then we're not going to be able to get rid of them. It's going to be great.
No. I did talk to our old friend, John Bokekamp. You know, of the Blacklist, and he asked,
what I've been doing this summer. Can we pick up that name for you?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just throwing it out there, but he told me he's going to take a listen to the new one and tell me his honest thoughts. So he creates real TV and I have to write a real script in that thing. So I'm not prepared. I don't think for the real objective opinion, but I hope you guys check it out if you haven't heard it yet.
I'll blow smoke up your ass on that one. Like you did for 10 years.
He will not. He will be very, very honest. All right. He's a good dude. By the way, speaking of Apple, he's got something coming in Apple in 2025. So keep an eye out. It might be, I don't know, something like The Last Frontier. Keep
an eye out. The Last Frontier?
That's the name of his show that he's doing. All right, guys, that's going to do it. Thanks everybody for listening. Thanks for the nomination. Cause we only make finals if you guys voted for us. So thank you for that. Greatly appreciated. We'll see what happens. Maybe we got a shot this year. All right. That would be cool. But thank you for listening. And remember, the next time you head to the theater or sit comfortably on your couch or just enjoying the sweet sounds of silence, buy popcorn. You know, because we're not doing a podcast, so it'll be quiet.
And a hush fell over the podcast.
Jesus. You know, is your, like, God damn it.